Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to the Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals Half-Year Results 2016 conference call. I am Selena, the Chorus Call operator. The conference must not be recorded for publication or broadcast. At this time, it's my pleasure to hand over to the management team of Cassiopea Pharmaceuticals. Please go ahead, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody. For joining the call today, this is Diana Harbort, the CEO, and I'm joined by Chris Tanner, our CFO, and Luigi Morrow, our CFO. Again, thank you for your interest in Cassiopea and for joining us today. We have a short agenda this morning or this afternoon, wherever you guys are. We're calling in from different locations here. Where we will be covering the first half of 2016 financials and then be giving you some updates on our key programs at the company. So we'll start with the first half 2016 financial results, and I'll turn it over to Chris Tanner.
Thank you very much. You saw the results which we released in the press release this morning, and in essence, we can summarize them in a couple of words. We had a loss of 8.5 million euro, which was substantially more, of course, than last year. But this is totally expected and planned. And as a matter of fact, if we look at our budgets, we would have probably had a slightly higher loss. But as Diana will explain later on, we've had some slight delays in some of the clinical trials, so the costs have not been quite as high as projected. Now, looking forwards, of these 8.5 million losses, and I'm currently on the page marked income statement. If we go to the next page, where we have a breakdown of the costs, you can see that the bulk of the costs, namely 5.5 million, are outsourced preclinical and clinical trial costs. Our own personnel costs are slightly less than a million, but this million, around half of this, is a non-cash cost because it is accrued cost for the option plan. So another thing which I think is worth mentioning, of course, the increased personnel costs has got to do with that at the beginning of last year when we made the IPO, or a year ago when we made the IPO, we only had three people on board, and today we have nine people, so this called for an increase in the personnel expense. If we then look at the try to find the number of the page. Let's discuss the income statement. The bulk of the outsourced preclinical trial and clinical trial costs were due to Winlevi, which were 5.1 million, a substantially higher number than last year. But this was to be expected because, as Diana will explain later on, this phase three trial is in full swing. There's actively, all the sites are up and running and is actively recruiting patients. On the other hand, Breezula is still on a very low number of 240,000 euro, but this is going to be increasing as we move into the dose-ranging trial for the next half. And you can see CB-061 and CB-062 just had very minor costs in the first half of this year. We go to the next slide. The important thing maybe on the total service cost for you to understand is the total cost that were billed by Cosmo, because Cosmo is working as a sort of a subcontractor from Cassiopea, where the people within Cosmo take on a whole range of activities. Cassiopea believes that this is less expensive to have these work subcontracted than to hire individual personnel to get this done. And as you know, both Luigi, who is the CSO, and myself, we work on a pro bono basis. That means our services are not being charged to the company. We look at the statement of financial position. What's, of course, clear is that the total assets have declined from 49.8 million to 41.8 million, and this is primarily because of the cash that has been burned, which the consequences, you can see that the cash has gone down from 48 to 40 million euro. Otherwise, on the asset side, there's practically no change in the intangible side. There's some patent costs that were capitalized, but that was all. The receivables are primarily receivables from an intercompany basis, as well as the current liabilities are payables due to Cosmo. If you look at the equity side, there's no debt, and equity declined, which is obvious since we had a loss, but the company is still around 93% capitalized with equity, and there's no plan on adding on any debt. I think we can jump over the share capital issues and the cash flow perspective. Just to come back to the other number, as I said before, part of the expenses were non-cash expenses, so the actual cash outflows were only 7.2 million, so nearly 1.2 million less than the loss that we showed. I think that concludes the financial comments of the financials. If you have any specifics, I would be glad to take answers on the financials right now.
The first question is from Mr. Bob Pooler from Valuation Lab. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Diana, Chris, and Luigi. Just on the financials then, for your full year 2016 guidance, where you had an operating loss of 22.871, I assume that will go down because you spend probably less in the first half and will probably spend with Brazil trial starting a little bit later, also a little bit less than two. Do you have a guidance there? What that would roughly be?
No, we don't have a precise guidance because, you know, I don't think the numbers reflect too much on what the value of the company is. It reflects more, as you correctly point out, possible delay in recruiting on the clinical trial mm-hmm. side. So we'll be having a lower loss, which means, however, that these expenses are going to be shifted into the coming years. So it's an indication, you know, moving forward when we looked at what we were going to be spending, given the some of the delays we've had, it's going to be less.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And then just maybe on headcount and so because of the general awards with biomass no longer doing that project, do you expect headcount to raise then at Cassiopeia, or will that be something done by Cosmo?
At the present
we're
time,
we're planning that to be using our service agreement with Cosmo, and
okay.
We also have contracted with. On a consulting basis with a very experienced clinical trialist who is really getting that trial back up and going. So won't see that in headcount.
Okay. And then just my final question for 2017, do you expect a similar loss as in this year, roughly?
Bob?
Yes? Oh, you
okay.
Didn't get my question. I just was asking if you would expect a similar loss in 2017 as in this year.
Well, no, because in principle, if you look on the long, in 2017, we expected, originally we budgeted a similar loss as we were going to be budgeting for 2016,
mm-hmm.
but we're moving part of the cost of 2016 into 2017. So
okay.
Depending, assuming that all the clinical trial programs move forwards, it's very well possible that our losses in 2017 are going to be a bit bigger than those of 2016.
Okay, thank you. Very helpful.
The next question comes from Mr. Peter Welford from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
So just to reiterate then, the overall burn guidance, if you like, for the entire programs is broadly unchanged. It's just really a phasing, I guess, is the question. And then
yes.
secondly, biomass. Is there likely to be any write-down of the asset of that because of the company ceasing operations? I think, actually, that investment shifted over to Cosmo, but is the company still, technically in operation, or is it actually insolvent and shut down operations? Thank you.
No, the company, as you may know, it had another program, which was an acute macular degeneration program, which was being treated also with tellurium, and they went into financing round, seeking financing to expand those activities, and then they were unable to raise any funds. So the board decided to practically freeze the company, put it into deep freeze until hopefully the financing environment changes and they can go up and refinance this again. This meant, however, going into deep freeze is that they basically moved the salaries of all the employees to zero. The employees are no longer doing any active activities, which meant that we had to step in. And there was, as a consequence, a delay in the trials because, you know, in the overlap of they sort of looking for other things that are important in their lives, and we, until we stepped in and took up the operations ourselves, that had caused a lull in the recruiting. But this should again go back to normal now.
Thank you.
There are no more questions at this time.
Well, then let's continue with Diane with the programs.
Sounds good. So I'm moving to page 16 of the presentation that gives you an overview of our pipeline. And our pipeline has advanced quite a bit in the last year.
Did you turn off the music? Turn off the music, please. Yes.
If you take a look at our pipeline, you'll see Winlevi is on track to have phase three results at the end of 2017 and launch in the 2018-2019 period. Breezula just completed earlier this year a very interesting proof of concept study that has given us the data in order to go ahead and fund our dose ranging program that will start later this year, and we'll have results at the end of 2017, but most likely early 2018. That's a 12-month study. I'll be talking about that soon. And then our topical antibiotic is just coming out of proof of concept. We will have results on our acne antibiotic. I'll be getting them the first week in August, so we'll be reviewing them and sharing them with the market soon thereafter. And our topical dental warts program, which had experienced some delays due to our partner Biomass, is now being taken over by Cassiopeia Cosmo, and we are moving forward in getting that trial completed. So why don't we talk about Winlevi? Many of you, of course, that have been following the company know about our topical anti-androgen for the treatment of acne. This program is a very large phase three clinical trial that's going very well. We are running two 700-patient trials with sites both in the U.S. and Europe. Our first patient was enrolled in November of 2015, and we're expecting the last patient last visit in the quarter four of 2017 with results not too soon after that. We are enrolling as the FDA normally requires for the indication of acne. We're enrolling subjects from 9 years of age and older, and we're enrolling patients with grades 3 and 4 on the IGA scale. We expect to have data at the end of 2017, and we're also having some of those patients roll over into a long-term open-label safety trial where over 300 subjects will be on drug for 6 months and 100 will have 12 months of exposure. This is very typical FDA requirement for a new chemical entity such as ours. And we're on target so far for filing our NDA and in mid-2018. Our study endpoints are the typical study endpoints you commonly see acne products pursuing in phase three clinical trials. I know you guys are very familiar with them. And on slide 18, I thought I'd share with you the status of our phase three trials as of a week ago. So if you take a look at that, our trials overall are 33% enrolled. Our phase three study, which is a U.S. study, has all 36 sites activated and 190 subjects have been randomized, with 58 completed. And our phase three study that contains sites in both U.S. and Europe, that for a total of 38 sites, we've got 270 randomized subjects and 79 completed. So if you look at our long-term open-label safety trial, 66 of the 137 completed patients have rolled over into that long-term safety study. So the study is progressing nicely and going very well. Now I'll talk about Breezula. We announced our phase two proof of concept results in February. So many of you are familiar with these. This is not new information. This is the same information that we shared before. But just as a reminder, in our POC, we had 95 enrolled patients, 78 completed treatment, 73 were in the per-protocol efficacy analysis. Reminder, this was a double-blind, three parallel arm study comparing Breezula 5% and minoxidil 5% to placebo for 6 months of treatment twice a day. And we conducted this study predominantly in 2015. The co-primary endpoints were the typical co-primary endpoints that you often see in androgenic alopecia studies. That is, in total area head count, as measured by Canfield photography, and the subject's hair growth assessment using the typical seven-point scale. Again, these were six-month endpoints. And we had other secondary endpoints that are also typical in a POC study for Breezula. These subjects had a mean age of 40. The range was between 18 and 50, and they all had mild to moderate androgenic alopecia. So you can see here we were using the modified Millward-Hamilton scale, and they were patients in grades 3 to 5. Page 20 shows the primary endpoint and total area head count. And this shows that both actives had an effect in the total area head count for androgenic alopecia, and there was very little placebo effect. If you take a look at it, this study was certainly not sized for statistical significance, though minoxidil did show some significance over the six-month period when you compare that total area head count to baseline. And our drug, Breezula, also approaches some significance. And clearly that vehicle, like I mentioned, was not effective. We did not, there's not much placebo effect you see in androgenic alopecia, which many of you know is in stark contrast to the placebo effect that's commonly found in acne studies. Now, the magnitude of effect was higher, slightly higher for minoxidil, but if you take a look at the variability, which we haven't shown here, the variability of response, you'll see that we're talking about hair counts of 16 versus a difference of a 10 hair count. So this is a very interesting endpoint using Canfield photography that's quite precise. These patients have quite a bit of variability. I think it's interesting to look at this POC data and in the context of the phase three comparisons that, in fact, have been published in the labels for the other two products that have been approved by the FDA, though decades ago, for the treatment of androgenic alopecia. And what's interesting to note is that if you take a look at the label for minoxidil, it's commonly known in the studies they've done that minoxidil reaches its peak effect at 16 to 24 weeks and decreases over time. It's also known that finasteride, an oral antiandrogen, reaches its peak effect much later at 12 months. And you can see that it reaches its about 75% of its peak effect, it reaches at month 6. So if we extrapolate what that would be for a topical antiandrogen like ours, this would predict, at least at the dose we tested, that our drug at 12 months likely would have a very similar to higher total area headcount than finasteride does. That is at the 5%. Now, of course, we haven't optimized our dose yet, and we'll talk a bit about our upcoming phase 2 dose ranging trial shortly. But this data in total area headcount, in the context of what we know about the already approved products, gave us quite a bit of faith in this program. And we, of course, vetted that with our scientific advisory board, and they were very pleased with the results as well. Now, if we take a look at the co-primary efficacy endpoint, which is the patient outcome, you'll see that the active treatments, whether they be Breezula or minoxidil, had a much higher favorable response in the patient's assessment than, of course, in the vehicle. So, again, we don't see much vehicle effect at all in androgenic alopecia. So both active showed a very nice favorable response in the hair growth assessment endpoint. So, and of course, what's interesting that is that that hair growth assessment endpoint nicely correlates with the hair count outcome. So overall, the results of our POC indicate very favorable efficacy profile with our 5% dose, and we believe it has the potential to perhaps show greater and sustained efficacy long-term, similar to at least to finasteride, without having the untoward side effects that are very well known for oral finasteride. Certainly in terms of local tolerability and safety profile, we're seeing a very nice, clean safety profile with no significant systemic AEs. And we are moving into our dose-ranging study. We're planning to initiate that study. The first patients will come on board in the fourth quarter of 2016. Now, this study, when we take a look at it, we are planning a 12-month study, not a 6-month study. And we'll be testing both higher and lower strengths to, of course, fully understand the dose-ranging profile of our product. Then if we move on to our topical antibiotic for acne, I just remind everybody this was a study in 90 subjects. Double-blind randomized with our 3% gel versus placebo BID for 12 weeks. It was conducted in Slovakia, and we expect results here in the next 2 weeks. Of course, we'll be making a very important go-no-go decision after that time, likely in Q3, Q4, and we'll be moving after our POC results into some further formulation work, skin penetration studies, and other pre-IND enabling studies that we'll do prior to filing that IND in 2017. In our work program, we talked a little bit about this, alluded to it with the discussions on biomass. This is a program we licensed from a partner, Biomass. Biomass was actually running this study. And this is a program that, in fact, there was already citations in medical journals on efficacy, but we wanted to have Biomass confirm the efficacy that was reported with this drug. So they were running a study for us, and this study is being conducted in Israel, and it's nearly halfway enrolled to date. But because of some of the instability issues that Chris talked about at Biomass, the study had very much slowed down in terms of enrollment. And now Cassiopeia has taken over control of that study, and we expect results early next year in 2017. So if you take in the first half or so, if you take a look at our future milestones, here on the last slide, 27, there'll be quite a bit of news flow coming out of the company over here in this horizon. For the second half of this year, you'll be expecting to hear not only the topical antibiotic results, but also the fact that our Brazilian studies have begun. And in 2017, in the second half of the year, we'll be announcing our top-line results of our Winlevi studies, phase three. We'll be going ahead and scheduling our pre-NDA meeting with the FDA, and we'll be also announcing the POC results in our genital warts program. And moving into 2018, we'll be filing our NDA for Winlevi and be announcing our Brazil phase two dose ranging results. With that, that is the end of our prepared presentation, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Once again, for questions, please press star and one. We have a question from Mr. Bob Puller. Please go ahead.
Just two more questions. One on Winlevi. The discontinuation rates, are they in line with what you were looking at, and also the reasons for discontinuation as well? In other words, no safety problems.
Thank you, Bob. That is absolutely correct. This is these discontinue rates are typical in what you see in acne trials. We're seeing, and of course, reminder, these are kids and teenagers. We're seeing, and I'm glad you asked this, we're seeing a continued very clean safety profile with our topical anti-androgen in all the studies to date, whether it be for acne or for androgenic alopecia. Side effects similar to placebo, things are, we're not seeing any signals at all.
Okay, great. And then my final on Brizola, just on the dosing trial, what are you going to use as comparator? Because now you're doing 12 months next to minoxidil, you could also potentially use also finasteride as well.
Yeah.
Just to show the effect that you're alluding to.
Yeah, so in the U.S., what we normally do, of course, for, as you know, for a formal dose-ranging trial is to prepare for the dose for phase three and to understand the program. And so our plan is not to have an active comparator.
Okay.
Typical with the dose-ranging trial, we'll be doing several arms to fully understand the dose curve versus placebo.
Okay.
It's a little tricky, by the way, just to remind you, finasteride is oral, and we're a topical, so it's not easy to do a double-blind study with a drug that has a different dosage form.
Mm-hmm.
Bob,
okay, thank you.
Bob is speaking. We are using four treatment arm, but without comparator control. The only control is the placebo.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Peter Welford. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my questions. So a couple. Firstly, on Winlevi, just looking at the recruitment rates, I guess given we would assume presumably since November the trial sites came online on a progressive fashion, and given the trial's now already a third enrolled after roughly 7-8 months, I guess I'm curious why you think it's going to take almost a year from now to enroll the remaining two-thirds of patients, given all sites are now activated, and presumably, therefore, the rate of enrollment is accelerated during the last 6 months. And then equally on Winlevi, can I just ask, are the 12 U.S. sites in Study 26, are they also sites in Study 25, or is that 12 sites in addition to the 36 in Study 25, i.e. in total 48 U.S. sites? And then perhaps the other one on Winlevi is, can you perhaps give some clarity on whether it's easier at the moment to enroll in Europe or in the U.S. in Study 26 and any differences you're seeing there? And then I've just got one on 061 I'll come back to.
Okay, Peter, Luigi speaking. Well, you're right. The enrollment is fluctuant, but now we are at the top of our possibility because all the sites have been approved. There was some progressive approval through the site because there was six countries involved. You know that the different approval time could be put as a mandatory. Well, starting from 3 months ago, we are at the top of our possibility, and recruitment rate now is in the order of 40 to 50 patients per month. That means that our prediction could be reached. As far as the other point, can you ask me again what you want to know?
Sure. Sorry. Are the 12 U.S. sites in Study 26 also involved in Study 25? So the 12 versus, or is it 48 U.S. sites in total? And is there any difference between what you're seeing in Europe versus the U.S. in terms of the ease of enrollment?
Europe in some time is more easier than in the United States because there is less competition. In the United States, there are more competition of the clinical trial on acne, and so this means that the recruitment could be fluctuation and waving. But in Europe, it's quite constant because the competition is less. That's the reason, but I'm sure that now we are at the top of our capability and the top rate recruitment should be reached.
And are the 12 U.S. sites in Study 26 also in Study 25 or not?
No, the 12 sites are enriching the so-called European study. The other was completely U.S. site-based. The European has site in 5 countries of Europe and 12 sites in the United States.
But they're mutually exclusive.
Got it. Yep. And then just on then 0601, I think you said before that the last patient had been enrolled in September, which is why you originally thought that we could get the data a bit earlier. So I guess, is it the data analysis that's taking time? Is it that patients, you know, in fact, some of the patients enrolled were excluded and therefore you had to, in fact, re-enroll more? Or what is it, I guess, that's given the delay in 0601? Thank you.
Well, as told Diana, the new timeline that has been set are based on the current data, taking into account all the data that you have reached up today. So they are absolutely definitive and progressive. And the last question that you had is if the long-term study has recruited more in Europe than in the U.S. The answer is at the beginning there was much more recruitment in the U.S., but now Europe was surpassed the U.S., overcome the U.S.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter, this is Chris. The delay that we've seen in the assessment of the 0601 has got nothing to do with the data complications or data quality. It has solely got to do with a bottleneck at the level of the CRO.
Great. Thank you for the clarity.
Ben?
The next question is from Mr. Maurizio Bernasconi from Bank Ambrosio. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. I have a couple of questions on Breezula. Those funding starting in phase two. So first of all, how much do you expect that will cost? And then given the length of the study, when do you expect enrollment will be concluded? And then when do you expect the final results? And then maybe finally on the headcounts, do you expect to have some additional headcounts going forward? Or how should we see the OPEX developing over the next year? Thank you.
Thank you for the question. We will, at the time we start the study, announce more details of the study itself. But our plan certainly is to start enrolling the patients this year, as I mentioned, and then to have results in early 2018. We're planning right now a 12-month study with some 6-month interim results, so it's likely that you'll have results sooner. But those details of that study will be more fully disclosed at the time we start the study.
Regarding the costs, can you say something on that, please?
So the study will be we're, of course, negotiating the final bids right now with the CROs, but the study will definitely be Perhaps. I'm trying to see if we're gonna. What it looks like here. We're looking at about a. Maybe about $6 million, you know, five and a half euros, something like that.
Okay, so thank you. And
now, of course, that's an estimate. You'll see when we give guidance in the future and we start the study itself, we'll give you the sort of information to make you comfortable estimating what that might look like. And you'll expect to hear from us on that, as, like I said, probably in the fourth quarter of this year. You'll get more details on Breezula. So just in a few months, 2-3 months here.
Thank you. And regarding the headcounts, can you say something more on that, please?
So no, we're already we don't plan to increase headcount for that study.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We of course do CROs for the to manage the trial. So our headcount now already takes into consideration the support of our programs.
Okay, thank you very much.
There are no more questions at this time. Would you like to conclude the call?
Yes. So thank you, everybody, for your interest in Cassiopeia and your ongoing support. We always appreciate hearing from you and are here to answer any questions if you'd like. We also look forward to seeing many of you at some of the conferences we'll be at later this year. We'll be in both London and Zurich for the Credit Suisse and the Jefferies conferences, both in November. And Chris will also be at Investora later this year. Here as well.
Ladies and gentlemen, the conference is now over. Thank you for choosing Chorus Call and thank you for participating in the conference. You may now disconnect your lines. Goodbye.